There go the doors. Welcome. So my name is Philip Moss. I'm managing partner at NTTX, who are a UK-based service provider and consultancy. And we have a long relationship and a long history of building Microsoft-based solutions. So today we're going to talk about how to stay calm when the lights go out, disaster recovery in the real world. Today's session is really about a wider journey that we've been delivering over the last couple of days. So we're talking here about the software-defined platform, the software-defined data center, the software-defined solution. And yesterday, if people were in the room, we did a session on the overall platform. We talked about 2012 R2 and 2012 R2 solution design. In this session, we're going to talk about disaster recovery, managed DR and DR in the real world. And then later on this afternoon, we're going to be doing a session about high availability, which is going to be about distributed HA and how to build high available sessions. If you've got time, I'd highly recommend attending that session this afternoon, because that's going to cover a lot of topics. So, as I said, we are going to talk about disaster recovery today. Now, today's session, how to stay calm when the lights go out. There we are. Lights gone out. Light bulb off. What's the solution to that? Light switch. Turn on. Calm restored. Thank you very much, Dave. Off you go. If only it was that simple. We'd all have a much easier life. Okay, so let's really talk now about the established model for doing DR. In the traditional model, and the model a lot of you are familiar of, you do the following type of configuration. You have a couple of data centers. You build some form of stretch cluster, some form of volume-based replication, probably using a SAN vendor. And you then have some form of active-passive failover. Is this a model people are familiar with? We have some nods in the audience, some hands. Who's familiar with this model today? Good. Excellent. Excellent. Now, that model works well. It is an efficient model. We've been building it for years. However, of course, the infrastructure costs are quite high. You are probably tied into a particular hardware vendor. You have complexity of challenging of management and overhead and configuration. It's also probably quite difficult to do planned failover and test failover in a partial situation, because with SAN replication, you are probably failing over an entire volume. So that's the traditional model. Now let's talk about the traditional DR challenge. And the reason I want to talk about this is to make sure everyone in the room is very clear and really understanding the kind of challenges we face. So let's look at this model here. We have our on-prem platform. You have these users. You have your users in your office and in your various offices, and you have your data centers. And then you also have your remote users, your lovely users floating out and about, who are probably laptop users or mobile device users. In a normal scenario, this is what happens. People connect to your internal data center, do work, access data, and they probably also connect remotely over VPNs or over HTTPS-based services. So your first DR scenario. You are now doing some form of DR replication to the outside world. Good solution. But outside world may be another data center you own. It may be a service provider. It may be to a public cloud offering. And you lose an application inside your data center. So what's happening in this scenario? Your users are having to still talk to your primary data center, for your workloads are still running, but then they've got to go to the DR site for the workloads that have failed. So that single application you've now got to make work. So that's scenario one. Second scenario. We go back to this primary configuration, our data center working, our remote users talking, our internal users talking. And we lose the entire data center. So we lost your entire data center. So what's happening in that scenario? Oops, sorry, forgive me. I think it's not working. So again, our users in this situation have got to have all of their services fail over. It's not a single application, but all of the services, so that the users can then reach their applications and services at the remote location, and critically have a connection to that remote location. And then, of course, we talk about the third scenario, where you lose your entire building. The lights have gone out. You have the flood. What do you do in that scenario? Well, then, of course, you've got to find somewhere for your users to work remotely and access their systems remotely, and then access that DR platform. In other words, we have these three scenarios, and I talk about them here. You have application within data center failure, entire data center location failure, and loss of access to and from your office location. And during this session, we're really going to focus on those three scenarios and how to really work on them and deliver them in the real world. So, thinking about that for a second, why is now a good time to start talking about DR? As I opened this session, I said, DR was historically quite challenging. It was costly. You were probably tied into a particular application platform or hardware vendor. There were options, they worked, but they were potentially time-consuming. We now have to move to a situation where we can now move to a software-defined DR scenario. I opened this session saying we're going to talk about software-defined solutions. Now, what does that really mean? It means that we can start building DR solutions that are built on commodity software and commodity hardware, the commodity software and hardware you already have inside your infrastructure today. And critically, when I talk to a lot of clients about DR, what actually drives them for DR is what they really want is a second data center. What they really want is another facility, but they can't justify it in terms of cost or complexity. Modern DR solutions allow you to get that failover and that resilience without the complexity of delivering an in-house second data center. Very, very, very compelling reasons. Now, why do we do all of this? Again, if any of you attended my session yesterday, we were talking about software-defined data centers, driving down costs, delivering commodity solutions. The same thing applies today when you're talking about DR. By using a software-defined DR solution, we can drive down costs and deliver a service in a way that is efficient and cost-effective. So, before we get into some DR in detail, what DR is not, and I really, really, really stress this, DR is not a patching and update solution. So please do not treat DR as a way to, I've got to patch my Exchange service today. I know I'm going to fail over my scenarios from the secondary site and then patch. It is not that. It is also not a backup and a long-term archival solution. DR is a failover solution. It is not a way of getting your data from 6 months ago, 8 months ago, 10 months ago, 5 years ago. So I just want to really put that out there. Now, let's talk about this concept of the DR toolkit. And unsurprisingly, as this is a Microsoft presentation, and we are Microsoft TechEd, let's talk about the Microsoft DR stack. This is a slide I suspect some of you are familiar with. If you look at the traditional network design today, we have this concept of storage, network, compute. And then on top of this, we have this concept of applications. You know, your line of business applications, your websites, your apps, your SQL servers. Today, as we've discussed, you have third-party replication options. You've got VM replication in the form of Hyper-V replica. You've got application-level HA in the form of SQL always on or Exchange DAG. And then we have this, the idea of DR orchestration and Azure Site Recovery Manager, which we're going to spend a lot of time talking about today. So, this is the Microsoft DR stack and the DR story. And as I said, we are going to spend some time talking about this today. Before we do that, though, we're going to talk about Hyper-V Replica. Who has used Hyper-V Replica in this room? Good. A few hands. Who's heard of Hyper-V Replica? A few more hands. Encouraging. Right. So, Hyper-V Replica arrived in 2012, or Windows Server 2012. And received improvements in 2012 R2. The way to think about Hyper-V Replica is it is a storage-agnostic, application-agnostic, in-box solution for replicating VMs. What I mean by that is that inside of your hypervisor, the VM is replicated to another hypervisor on a schedule. That schedule can be between 30 seconds or 15 minutes. The key advantage of this, it's very simple, it's free because it's in-box, and it's very flexible. As I said, it's storage agnostic, it's platform agnostic. Very simple, very easy, very reliable. Very, very, very good solution for failover of simple applications. Talk about it here. So, supports multiple point-in-time failover and recovery. It supports both planned and unplanned failover options. And critically, since 2012 R2, it dramatically reduces the I.O. overhead that you historically had with Hyper-V Replica. If you deployed, did anyone deploy Hyper-V Replica in 2012? No hands. Oh, we have a couple of hands. Thank you. Good. There was a big change in the actual overhead in terms of replication volumes, the amount of replication that needed to occur between 2012 and 2012 R2. Now, Hyper-V Replica has a limitation. It's quite difficult to deal with multiple applications, or sorry, multi-tiered applications, so something like Exchange, or an application that has an SQL backend and then has a .NET framework in the middle with an IIS frontend. That is quite complicated for Hyper-V Replica to deal with, because you have to replicate each of the VMs in isolation and then write separate workflow to start those VMs up in the right order and make sure the dependencies are working. Unsurprisingly, there is a solution to this problem. Azure Site Recovery, or historically known as Hyper-V Recovery Manager. Who has heard of ASR, Azure Site Recovery? Good. Very glad you're in this session. That is the key thing. So, the way to think about Azure Site Recovery is the orchestration and the workflow engine for DR. What do I mean by that concept? That means that you can take an application as a package. So I talked about this SQL backend, this .NET middle layer, this IIS frontend, and replicate that as a package. And then during failover, orchestration will kick in to start up the SQL database first, and then the .NET application, and then the IIS frontend. In other words, it is dealing with the plumbing and the complexity and the difficulty of doing your DR scenario. Now, how does ASR work at a high level? In this scenario, and it's a very, very, very conceptual example, I have this concept of a primary site and a secondary site. Now, ASR uses Azure. Very, very, very clear. It is using Azure as an orchestration system, not as a data storage system. This is important, or more importantly, many people might go, why are we using Azure? I don't want to use Azure, to be very clear. Azure is being used because if you have a DR scenario and you lose a site, you need an external system actually recognizing that failover occurred and to start the failover process on another site. Azure is the perfect scenario. So, as you can see in this situation here, we have this concept of a primary site and a secondary site. Replication is occurring between those two sites, with Azure dealing with that replication and also the orchestration for failover testing and tracking. So, I put this slide up here as kind of what I'd call the high-level summary of Azure Site Recovery, and I won't go over it, but to watch it back later on the video, you can see the high-level summary. It is an orchestration and workflow engine to empower DR. So, we've highlighted what ASR is. Let's now look at your ASR deployment options. And there are three. You have three deployment options now. The first is, for use of a better term, what I would call the on-prem to on-prem. In other words, the type of image I showed you before. In this scenario, you take your primary site and you replicate your secondary site. This is ideal if you have two data centers. Again, ASR is doing the orchestration. Now, something you might not be aware of is you can also do that to a third site. That's quite important because it now allows you to do primary, secondary, and tertiary DR scenarios. Very, very, very useful. In this scenario, what is happening is that you are maintaining the replication yourself, or the replication is occurring between your facilities, and you are building your DR plans and your failover plans. So in other words, all you are using Azure for is to provide the plumbing to make this stuff work. The second deployment option, on-prem to Azure. In this scenario, you don't need a second data center. In this scenario, what you're doing is you are actually replicating to Azure. So your VMs will replicate to Azure, and the data will be stored in Azure, and you fail over to Azure. In this scenario, again, you are still maintaining the recovery plans, you are still instigating failover yourself, you are maintaining control, but the infrastructure and the VMs are stored inside of Azure. And then the third scenario, which is one which has only recently been supported, on-prem to service provider. Now, the ASR guys, and I'll talk some of their sessions later on this afternoon, are going to talk about this in more detail, but here is a new scenario that Microsoft is now supporting, where you can take your on-prem VMs and use ASR to replicate to a service provider. Now, there are a number of certified service providers who are going to be announced that fully support and are compliant with this scenario. Why is this a useful thing to do? Well, the service provider may well be in your region, which means that you're not going to break data sovereignty rules. And also, the service provider will provide this service as a managed DR experience. As part of the managed DR experience, the service provider is going to do your failover plans. They are going to do all that orchestration to figure out how the application starts up. In other words, you take the service as a managed experience. So, we have three scenarios that we've just discovered. On-prem to on-prem, using ASR as your glue. On-prem to Azure, where you're actually replicating to Azure and you're using Azure as your storage location for your VMs. And on-prem to service provider, where it is a managed experience to a service provider, which is really good if you want a managed, looked after DR scenario, and also you want to deal with data sovereignty challenges. Now, how do you actually choose and think about what's important to you? And I leave these questions up here because I can't answer them. But these are the type of questions that you need to consider when you start thinking about your DR. I've spoken about your three scenarios. And for example, you know, is data sovereignty important to you? You know, the top box. If it is, you probably want to look at the service provider options. You know, do you already have a second data center? Fine, if you do, you probably want to do an on-prem to on-prem scenario. Yes. Do you have sufficient link capacity to actually make the replication work? These are the kind of questions you need to ask yourself, and your choice about the correct DR solution will be based on these responses. So, as I've just elaborated, what are your choices when it comes, or what drives your primary selection about which option to go for? So I already said, on-prem to on-prem, great if you already have a second data center. Potentially a complex setup because you're doing all of the plumbing between your data centers to actually replicate the VMs yourself. The on-prem to Azure, fantastic solution if you don't have an existing data center and you don't have any data sovereignty issues. It's very, very, very easy to set up. Azure does almost all the plumbing for you. Azure becomes your very safe replication partner. Or you have the on-prem service provider. Absolutely key if you have data sovereignty issues and you need to stay within region and know where your data is. Absolutely key if you want a managed DR experience where somebody else is dealing with the failover planning and dealing with the orchestration. Now, that's a high-level background to ASR. Now I think it's really important to think about the ASR workflow for a second. So think about the following scenario. This applies whether you are working on-prem to on-prem, whether you are working on-prem to Azure, or whether you are working on-prem to service provider. However, in the third scenario, the service provider will do a lot of this work for you, which is the real value added service provider will give you. So we talk about this end-to-end workflow. So the first thing you're going to do is you're actually going to plan that you have enough capacity to do your failover. You are going to register the ASR services. You are going to set up ASR registration and subscriptions inside of Azure. That's stage one. The way to think about that is basic plumbing. Then what we're going to do is we're actually going to decide what applications we're going to protect. We are going to work out what the dependencies of those applications are. So I go back to my scenario of an SQL server with a .NET front end and an IIS application. We're going to look at that and say, okay, so for SQL to work, we need some domain controllers, and that needs to start up first. And then once that has started up, the .NET middle tier has to start up. It has to authenticate against the SQL and the SQL backend. And then once they've started up, then the IIS front end can work out and start up. In other words, we look at the way the applications have to work, and then we plan and build our recovery plans. The recovery plan is the orchestration. It is the workflow to bring these applications back online. Now, what's very interesting as you start doing this protecting and planning phase is that you probably want to talk to your third-party line of business vendors. In other words, the people who actually write your line of business applications. Who has a critical application written by a specialist in their industry that they absolutely rely on? I know most of my clients do. Who has an application that is unique to their business sector? Nobody? I would be very surprised. Okay. In almost all cases, you are going to have specific applications you're going to have to view and understand what the workflow is like. Then, we have set up, we've configured, and we've planned our recovery plans. Then, with ASR, we gain monitoring. And this is really attractive because inside of the ASR portal, we can check to see how replication is going, what the state of our DR is, how failover is working. And we can achieve all of that from the ASR portal inside of monitoring. And then last, of course, we have the ability to actually instigate recovery. And we have the ability to do both testing of failover and DR. So in other words, we can actually do testing failover. We can do unplanned failovers, and something's all gone wrong. Or, of course, we can do a planned failover because we know we're going to have a system outage or we know we've got to do downtime for some reason. In other words, we gain control. And all of this is driven from the ASR portal. Now, we talked about the workflow. We've talked about the ASR high level. What I'm discussing here is actually talking about these recovery plans, understanding how you build your application recovery plans. So the first thing to understand is what VMs are actually part of your application. Specify what VMs and what order they have to start up in. Understand, of course, that if you're doing a planned failover, the workflow has to shut the application down probably in the reverse order to the way it has to start up. I go back to my analogy. If you've got an SQL backend with a middle layer of .NET and a front-end IIS application, to shut that down in a controlled way, you'll shut down IIS first, then you'll shut down .NET, and then you will shut down SQL. And the startup process will be exactly the reverse. Understanding this workflow, understanding how your applications are configured is really important for building recovery plans. And then this is a really important concept to recovery plans. The recovery plan supports the ability for custom actions. When I say custom actions, that could be running some script. That could be a note to say, the technical person needs to go and flick the power switch in the building because there wasn't any power. In other words, the recovery plan workflow can include both physical and computer operations. Very, very, very useful for building your standard operating procedures and your workflow processes. So, we've spoken about the high-level process for ASR. We have spoken about the planning consideration for recovery plans. Now we're going to talk about what those DR options really look like. The first thing we're going to talk about is obviously the scenario of a test failover. Test failover is incredibly important in DR. How many people have really tested their backup? How many people guarantee that they know they can recover their data they've got on those backup tapes or backup disks? Few people. Good. How many people actually do backup? Good. Right. So, based on that difference, I would assume that not everybody in this room is 100% sure that their backup is going to work. It's all right. Lots of people do it. Don't worry. Now, this is why test failover is so important. One of the key things about ASR is it makes it very easy to test your DR and failover. Now, what does that mean? That means that you can invoke a test failover and leave your primary system running, so your users are not affected. So your users can carry on using your primary system, and you can invoke a test failover and test it in isolation to make sure your workflow and your logic worked, and then just kill it off, forget about it. In other words, you can do that when you first set it up, or you can do it at points during the year. That is very important when you've got compliance considerations to deal with, or you make modifications to your system. Test failover is a fantastic capability within ASR. We then have the concept of plan failover. Plan failover is an ideal solution when you've got a known downtime. For example, you have been told by your local council or governing body that you are going to have a power cut in your office building. With a planned failover, you can actually instigate the failover, you can shut everything down in a controlled manner, and the failover will happen to your DR solution, and that will start up. Now, two very useful things happen. One, that when you do a planned failover, the system is shut down gracefully. That means that no data loss will occur between the primary site and the secondary site. Two, you can work on the failover copy during that downtime, and then replicate those changes back again. So it means your users can actually do active work and then fail back again. And then we have what I'd call the lights go out scenario, the two unplanned. Something's gone wrong. And these now fall into two scenarios. The first scenario is that something's gone wrong, but the primary site can actually will attempt to still shut down the stuff on the primary site and will replicate that information to the secondary site. That's an attractive thing to try and do because it means that you won't get any form of data loss during failover. However, the worst case scenario, unplanned failover, is you just lose the primary site. You lost everything. Everything failed. You lost the power. When that happens, failover will occur and you potentially will get data loss because you will only get the data from the last time replication occurred. But your systems will start up and you'll be able to carry on working. So, we have spoken about the deployment options inside of ASR. We have talked about recovery plans. We have talked about recovery plan planning. Now we get into the concept of what do you need to consider to actually deliver ASR? Some good news, or opinion viewpoint. You must have VMM today if you are going to use ASR. The good news, though, is that you can have either VMM R2 or VMM 2012 SP1. In other words, depending on whether you're using Server 2012 or 2012 R2. So you have some flexibility there. They are both fully supported. Where's my date? There we are. Thank you. Right. The second thing to understand is you have a number of topologies. Can I just check who has VMM in the room today? We have some VMM users? Good. Okay. For the people who don't have VMM, we'll come on to that solution. So, for people who have VMM, you have great flexibility in the way you actually configure VMM deployment. In other words, if you just have two sites and you're running a single VMM configuration across both sites, fully supported. If you have multiple sites and they're independent VMM configurations, also fully supported. If you have multiple sites with dedicated VMMs with no form of trust relationship, again, fully supported. In other words, there is no dependency or VMMs have trust relationships. There is no dependency they're within a single VMM configuration. Very, very, very useful capability. Now, there is a challenge with ASR. Earlier, I spoke about this concept of DR to the service provider. Now, underneath the covers, ASR is using Hyper-V Replica, this very efficient, very powerful replication technology. Hyper-V Replica needs to be able to find the hosts using their internal fully qualified domain names. What that means is you have to publish your hosts to the internet, and your service provider has to publish its hosts to you so you can find them. So think about the following scenario. At the bottom, we have our on-prem. You have your on-prem hypervisors for your firewall. Everyone has firewalls, yes? Yes? Good. Yes, that's encouraging. Good. Right. So in this scenario, we have an on-prem and we have a firewall. But what we have to do is you have to have your on-prem servers at the bottom being able to see the service provider's hypervisors. So how do we do that? So we do an internal host name here, and obviously we, my clicker would work. There we are, good. And then you would publish that through your firewall using a traditional publishing rule. Now, the service provider is going to do exactly the same thing. Service provider is going to publish its internal hosts and publish them to public IPs. However, ASR, or more importantly, Hyper-V Replica, needs to be able to find the internal domain names. In this case, we have host 4 on your internal network, and we have HH host 20 on the hoster network. Those internal fully qualified domain names need to be reached by each party using the public IP addresses. In other words, we have to get the internal host names published on the red public addresses. So, that means we have to basically fool. We have to trick Hyper-V Replica into understanding the public fully qualified domain names. What does that actually mean? What that means is we have to set up NAT rules for our firewalls, as I just showed you, to publish the internal Hyper-V hosts. We then have to tell our service provider what those hosts are called and what public addresses they are published on. You can also see here on the slides, it's port 8083 and 8084, depending on whether you're doing Kerberos or certificate-based authentication. And by the way, for almost all service provider scenarios, you'll end up doing certificate-based authentication, because if you think about it, there's no direct relationship between your on-prem and service provider's network. Now, the service provider is going to give you the list of all of their public servers, their publicly published Hyper-V servers. And then you are going to have to, inside your own internal DNS, create a zone entry to go and find the public fully qualified domain names for that service provider. Now, I should stress, this is only required in the ASR to service provider scenario. It is not required in the on-prem to on-prem. It is not required in the on-prem to Azure scenario. So for your panic, this is only required in the on-prem service provider scenario. And I shall, you know, this information's up there. If people have questions about doing this, please come and talk to me about it later. So. Plumbing. Imagine the following scenario. We have this core fabric for doing replication, this thing called ASR. We have chosen our application that we want to replicate, be it Exchange or this hypothetical SQL application I keep talking about. But none of these things are going to work without core plumbing technologies. So we need all those core bits of infrastructure, all those core services. In other words, we need Active Directory, we need DHCP, we need DNS. We need those capabilities to be available in our failover scenario. Because if you don't, none of these core applications are going to work. So, you have two ways of dealing with this. Your first option, of course, is that you actually fail over and do your DR of your core services as part of your DR planning. In other words, as part of having your recovery plan, you actually replicate and fail over domain controllers and DNS servers and related services. That is a perfectly acceptable model to use. Absolutely fine. The challenge of that, of course, is that before your application can fail over and start up, you've got to start up all that core infrastructure. You have to spin up these VMs running your domain controller. You have to spin up your DNS. You have to spin up your DHCP. So that's option one. The other option, of course, is in your DR location, you maintain domain controllers and DHCP and DNS on those remote locations. Now, that is a preferred option if you're running in-house data centers. It is a preferred option if you want to have faster failover times. However, if you are failing over to a service provider or you are failing over to Azure, it means that you need to maintain a direct connection and have those VMs live in some form of infrastructure as a service scenario. So, trade-offs. If you don't keep alive and you replicate the domain controllers and other services as part of the failover plan, simple, easy to achieve, slower failover. If you keep them live, your failovers will be faster and gives you more flexibility, but you have to maintain them, which may be extra cost and more complexity. Two scenarios, both are perfectly supported. Capacity planning. Now, we're replicating VMs. It's going to be some bandwidth requirements. Now, what becomes very interesting here is we have to do a computation about how much data you're replicating, how often your VMs change, how much data you create. And you need to plan for this. Now, fortunately, the Hyper-V Replica team have provided a very, very, very good guide, which you'll see at that link down there, which helps you understand your data churn rate and how much data you actually, or sorry, forgive me, how much data you're going to create, how much will be sent over the wire, and therefore how big a bandwidth and how big a pipe you need. Again, these considerations apply whether you're doing on-prem to on-prem, on-prem to Azure, or on-prem to service provider. All those things are equally applied. I would really stress that when you talk about and plan internally, you need to build in headroom, which says, if I've got 100 meg a second of data and I've got a 100 meg pipe, you've got other things running on those pipes. You need to really think about the other services you're running, because I have seen scenarios where people have turned on DR and have gone, my DR's working, but my Outlook web access now is absolutely awful because their DR has taken their entire internet connection. So. Just consider and think about it. So, dealing with IP changes. At the very beginning of this session, I talked about something called IP injection. Again, imagine the following scenario. You are taking virtual machines and you are replicating them to a new site. That new site will be running inside a different IP subnet. Now, Hyper-V Replica has a great technology for this. It's called IP injection. What Hyper-V Replica does is the VM goes to a different site and it injects the IP address of the subnet that VM is now running on. In other words, if it moves from a site on a 10 range and moves to a site on a 172 range, Hyper-V Replica will automatically put that new IP range in. That's brilliant. It means the VM starts up, can see network resources, can see the outside world. Very, very, very useful. The drawback, though, is that that only applies to the VNIC, the virtual NIC, in other words, the core network services. Unfortunately, as we all know, almost all applications have VM bindings, or sorry, have IP bindings inside of the actual applications. And I give some scenarios here. Very common on website bindings. Who's done certificate bindings? Yep. IIS bindings, certificates? Yes, good. A few hands, good. Okay. So as you'll know, those are bound to an IP address inside of Internet Information Server. The same thing applies to SQL database strings and to email servers. The classic one is the SMP gateway, where, of course, that is bound to a particular IP. Now, what does that mean? That means that during your failover, although the VM will start up on a different subnet, the applications won't work because they're bound to the IP ranges of the old subnet. That is a problem, an enormous problem, because what it means is that your DR doesn't work, and actually you're left with VMs that don't work. So, How do we deal with that problem? And that's where it gets very interesting. So you have a number of options. The first option is you can actually run a script. You can actually execute scripts on your remote machines, and you can run script to actually change the bindings and change the IP bindings of things like the SQL database connection or the IIS connection strings. Now, this is quite easy in ASR because ASR allows you in its recovery plans to instigate scripts. You can make the scripts, you can write them, and have them start up as part of your recovery plan. Very, very, very flexibility. Other options. You could do it manually. Again, ASR, because it supports manual steps as part of your recovery plans, you write into your ASR failover plan that a person goes and makes the change. Perfectly acceptable, perfectly reasonable. You could also use local DNS. Instead of using IP addresses inside your application connection strings, use DNS entries. By using DNS entries, of course, they will update when the machine moves to a different IP range, and then things carry on working. And lastly, I should highlight, because this stuff, you're probably sitting there going, this sounds difficult, this sounds complicated. The ASR team are making available in the near future a number of templates to actually give you the script changes. And they are going to make templates available to you for IIS connection strings and SQL connection strings. So for those common applications, they will help you do that IP injection changing. Very, very, very capability. However, there is another option. And forgive me while I have a drink. So, who has heard of the Hyper-V network virtualization? A few hands. Okay. So, for those who have not heard about it, this was a technology that arrived in 2012. It allows you to virtualize an IP range or a network on top of the physical fabric. Why is that very useful for the failover scenario? It allows you to maintain your IP address range from your primary site to your secondary site. Let's think about that for a second. On my primary site, I'm running in a 10 range. When I fail over that application or the workload to the secondary site, it stays running in that same 10 range. In other words, all the problems I just highlighted and gave you a bunch of workarounds for are gone. All the applications just start up. All the applications just work because they're running in the same subnet on the same network. Very, very, very valuable capability. Now, there are, of course, some trade-offs in this. The first thing to understand is you don't need to do this both sides. If you are going to a service provider or you are going to some other options, you don't need to use Hyper-V network virtualization or NVGRE on your primary site. You can go from the primary site where the applications are running on your physical layer, and they can go to a virtualized network on the remote site, so you maintain the same subnet without you having to do all the complexity. One of the biggest advantages of using a hosted version or using a service provider for ASR is they will do all of this work for you. So let's just think about that for a second. You can then offload the work of actually dealing with IP address changes and making the applications fail over and work by using network virtualization. And by working with a service provider, you can make them do the work and all the complexity and the plumbing. Now, there are some limitations with using this network virtualization concept. You can't do partial failovers. Now, why is that? In this scenario, we have this subnet that is on the primary site, and I'm going to fail over to exactly the same subnet on the secondary site. Hold on. If I have both sites live, I've now got two subnets which are the same, which are actually routable to each other. In the IP world, that's not a good thing. So, one of the limitations of using network virtualization of NVGRE is it stops you doing partial failovers. To be very clear, what that stops you doing is failing over some applications inside of one subnet, but not others. Right? It does not prevent you from doing test failovers. It does not prevent you from doing 100% failovers. It's only in the partial scenario we get the situation. Hyper-V network virtualization greatly simplifies some of the challenges around writing the orchestration and writing IP injection challenges. It is very, very, very attractive when you are trying to do entire site failover. In other words, you lose all your infrastructure and you want to fail over the entire site to a secondary situation. Very attractive option. If you only want to do specific applications, I'd probably say, don't use this, and actually do the scripting and some of the other work to make that work. Okay. So, we've spoken about ASR, we've spoken about challenges and configuration, we've talked about recovery plans. We're now in a situation where you've got your recovery working, you've failed over your application to another site. Now, how on earth are you going to get your users to access it? And we basically speaking have three options here. The first option, of course, is a good old site-to-site VPN. If you remember at the beginning of this session, I showed you that diagram and I said, right, you know, we've lost our primary site. How are these users going to get to the application? And I mean on-prem users and remote users. So you can maintain site-to-site VPNs. You can either have those permanently maintained the entire time, or you can have them invoke when failover occurs. Now, if you do it when failover occurs, you need to understand the underlying routing change. I'm going to be English, actually, for once. I'm going to say routing change. So we need to understand the underlying routing change and potentially there's going to be effect on DNS and updates. In other words, you are going to have a network topology consideration. That's an important planning. Second option, you could do web application publishing. In other words, if you've only got apps that are failing over where the actual front-end consumption is an HTTP or HTTPS, you can publish that app as a web publishing scenario from the DR site. Third option, the virtual desktop. In this scenario, what we've said is, okay, we've lost our primary site and we may well have actually lost our users' computers. What we're actually going to do in the DR site is spin up some virtual desktops, either using remote desktop session host or VDI scenario, and actually allow those users to remote into virtual desktops, which then allows you to get to your core applications. So that's scenario three. So we're going to talk about these scenarios now in more detail. So we spoke about site-to-site tunnel first of all. As I already highlighted, you have two options. You can either maintain the site-to-site VPN the entire time, or you can bring it up during failover. And both options are completely supported. The thing I would really stress here is site-to-site VPN still has to deal with the IP injection issues. You still have to deal with those challenges because, of course, there is a subnet change when you do a site-to-site VPN. I should also stress, if you do an NVGRE or Hyper-V network virtualization failover, you will need to have routing equipment and site-to-site gateway equipment that can deal with the fact that the subnet hasn't changed. Think about this for a second. You have a primary site running a particular subnet, this 10 range. It fails over to a secondary site, again running in the same subnet. Your routers that create your site-to-site VPNs need to be able to understand that the route is changing, but the IP address is the change. It also is exactly the same. So you need to build that into your network topology planning. Web applications. This scenario is fantastic, of course, when it's only web applications or a limited application you want to get hold of. But you have to think about what the workflow is, because, of course, a failover occurs, the application starts up, but then you actually have to do two things. You have to publish that application out to the internet and update things like the DNS and other resources so that your users actually find it. Now, that becomes quite an interesting challenge, because you fail over, that's easy enough to do. You can start the application up. That's easy enough to do with ASR. But then we get to this situation where I've also got to update DNS entries, but I've also got to make sure all of my users aren't using stale old entries pointing to the old site. That means I need to do planning around time to live for entries. And that means I need to do planning about how I'm actually going to update my DNS when failover occurs. And here's the key thing. Don't put your DNS servers as part of your failover plan, because if you've lost your DNS and you fail it over, no one's going to find you. In this scenario, you probably actually want to move your public-facing DNS to an external location. In other words, you want a location where your DNS service isn't going to go down during failover. Again, remember, you might not be able to update your DNS programmatically, but inside of ASR, you can put in manual workflow to go out and say, right, I need to update the DNS with these settings during failover. These are all things you need to plan for. Something else I should really stress here. I would recommend against using round-robin DNS. There are people who say, okay, the way I'm going to do DR is I'm going to have dual entries for my DNS. In other words, dual site points for my DNS. If you do that in a failover scenario, 50% of your hits are going to return to the dead site. Now, you'll find actually most machines will cope with that because they'll just go and do another lookup. It's a very, very, very inefficient way of doing it. I'll highly recommend against it. The other thing I would recommend if you're building complex or distributed apps is go and take the services of some of the external load balancers. There are many providers out there who will give you, as a service, a front-end load balancer / redirector. In other words, you pay for the redirector and they will automatically detect the failover and have your users come into the right site in the event of a failover. There are many providers out there. I can chat to you about it later if you want to. And so, the last option, the virtual desktop one. In this scenario, what we are saying is we're saying, right, you are going to maintain a VDI infrastructure or a remote desktop session host infrastructure, and you are going to maintain that on the failover site When failover occurs, you will start that infrastructure up and your users will connect to those virtual desktops to actually consume the applications and the services. This is the ideal solution for all the lights go out, because your users have lost access to the office. They've probably lost their computers. Everything's failed. In this scenario, though, the users can work from home or their local coffee emporium. And then they can just connect over the internet from any device, you know, the BYOD device or a computer, and connect into a virtual desktop to give them their applications, their services, and all of their data that has failed over as part of your DR plan. Now, there are a number of options in this scenario. You could go to the hassle and aggravation of building a virtual desktop infrastructure and maintaining it yourself, either in Azure or on-prem. Or go and get service providers to do it. One of the lovely options of many of the service providers is that they will provide you the DR or the remote desktop solution as a bolt-on option, which sits there quietly in the dark. It's not doing anything, right, until failover occurs. When you instigate failover, that system wakes up and your users can connect to it. In other words, a completely managed end-to-end DR solution. Yes. This is the ideal solution when you have a complex set of applications that you're failing over and your users have complex client apps that must also fail over and be configured to talk to your applications. This is the ideal solution because you can have users connect to your virtual desktops and they're fully working. So, before we get into the coming soon, we've spoken about ASR, we've spoken about the recovery plans, we have spoken about how to actually then connect your applications when they fail over and how to do that in a practical world, and we've spoken about the pitfalls, some of the pros and cons for doing it. Now, what I want to do now is talk about some of the things that are coming soon, shall we say, in the wonderful world of ASR and DR. So, for this entire session, we have been talking about the underlying replication being done via Hyper-V Replica. That is not, I'm pleased to say, your only option. ASR, as user site recovery, is actually underlying storage replication technology agnostic. And some of the guys will be talking about this later. We have EMC, HPE, and NetApp are fully supporting replication with ASR with their underlying SAN products. So for people who have investments in EMC, HPE, and NetApp, you can use their underlying replication technology in their SAN and use that with Azure Site Recovery. It is fully integrated. The other thing coming in the next version of Windows, you saw it in the keynote, the inbox volume replication is also going to be supported by Azure Site Recovery. And in some of the sessions that I'll talk about later, there are going to be some deeper dives in all of this. Now, that's a really interactive thing to deliver, because what it means is that you are offloading the replication workload and overhead from your Hyper-V servers, from your hypervisors, and you're moving it down to your storage level. So it's being more efficient, it's being quicker, it's doing all those things that your SANs were very good at doing, being really efficient. There are some trade-offs, though. Because this is now a volume replication rather than a VM replication-based technology, you can't fail over a single VM. You have to fail over all of the VMs on the volume at once, because we're now replicating volume A from two locations. That means you have to do some planning, because if you want to start doing partial failovers, because you've got to do all of the VMs on a single volume at once, you have to start doing things like, well, I'm going to have a volume that actually contains application A, and all the VMs in that application are on that volume. And I'm going to have another volume that contains application B, and all the VMs in that application are in volume B. So that it gives you replication options. Also, because it's volume-based replication, and volumes have to be an active-passive volume replication type offering, it means that you can't do test failovers and leaving the primary site still active. Because in a test failover, of course, you will have to take the secondary site active, and then the primary one will have to be dark. So, trade-offs. You get considerable performance improvements because you can do it at the storage level and take all of that richness that you get from your SAN providers. But you have some trade-offs in the form that you cannot do partial failovers, and you potentially have some deeper planning considerations in the place of where you actually put your VMs and which volumes you put them on. Now, this is one of my favorite subjects. ASR today has to be done via the Azure portal. Setup has to be done via that Azure portal. You have to build your recovery plans via the Azure portal, and it's a very good web UI. Works very, very, very well. The ASR team are making available, and they're going to talk about it later on this afternoon, a full API. That means that you are not going to have to use the Azure portal. You can use nice-friendly REST or PowerShell interfaces to actually manage ASR. And critically, that reduces your errors. The biggest reason failures to occur is because humans have made a mistake. If you are using workflow driven by automation and PowerShell and REST, you remove that problem during failover. So some of the guys later on this afternoon are going to talk more about the API. It's a fantastic new capability. And lastly, coming in 2015, one of the best bits of news we've had. At the beginning of the session, I said, to use all this lovely stuff, you've got to have Virtual Machine Manager. And I said, how many of you got VMM? And only a few of you put your hands up. And the rest of you probably went, no, I have no option for this. So, good news. The requirement for VMM is being removed in 2015. Think about that for a second. No VMM requirement. You can run this on anything. Also, critically, you are no longer limited to do DR just on VMs. You can do DR on physical machines. You also can do it on machines earlier than Windows Server 2012. Think about that for a second. We've now opened up Server 2008, physical servers that can now be replicated and have DR. We have removed the requirement for VMM, which means you do not have to have System Center. That opens up the opportunities for smaller sites, but opens up topologies where System Center is not deployed in today. Huge improvements. Now, you're going to wonder how this works. This is a byproduct of Microsoft buying the Image technology earlier on this year. There is an agent that now actually runs inside of the physical virtual machine. That agent, as I show in my little workflow there, replicates out all of the I.O. which is being written to the underlying hard disk, be that virtual or physical. A external broker or an aggregator sends that securely out over the internet to the service provider. The service provider then writes those out to virtual machine files, and then recovery plans and automation kick in. Let's think that through for a second. So, in 2015, you will be able to take servers that are running earlier version of Windows than 2012. You will also be able to take servers that are physical, not virtual, and have them replicate out to a DR site where they become virtual and you can still maintain failover and orchestration and all that lovely, rich technology we spoke about earlier. Very, very, very exciting technologies. And again, the team are going to be talking about that more later on this afternoon. So, let's talk about summaries quickly. We spoke about the traditional ways of looking at DR. We spoke about why now, using a software-defined solution and combining the power of Azure with the capabilities you have on-prem and also the capabilities you can get for a third-party service provider, we can drive down cost delivering DR at the same time as delivering compelling solutions, meeting those DR scenarios. We spoke about how you can deploy DR in various options. We spoke about some of the considerations, some of the planning considerations you need to have around ASR, particularly around capacity planning, around replication planning, around how you actually effectively publish your hypervisors and your internal machines. And then lastly, you know, I've spoken about some of the new capabilities and the fact that critically we are going to have physical support and we are going to have support from earlier versions of Windows and Server 2012. Now, any questions? Or have I bored you all to death? I still got laughter, so I haven't killed you all. Any questions? Gentlemen here, could I ask you to come to the mic, please, because they're very keen to... Forgive me, can you come to the mic, please, so they get it on recording? Thank you, forgive me.
Thank you. You talk a lot about planning. What about the fallback? Now I stay after disaster recovery, I stay in the Azure world, and then I want to come back into my own data center. What must I consider to plan the fallback?
Right, forgive me. So I believe the question is, how does the failback happen after DR has occurred? Is that the question? Thank you. So to repeat the question. So DR has occurred, you have done some work during the DR, you know, changes have been made. Then ASR automatically replicates your changes back to the on-prem, and then shuts down. So the way to think about it is that you do some work, and then when you're ready to bring live again, the replication happens in the reverse direction, back to your primary site, and then the DR site is shut down again, put into the dormant state, the live site comes back up again, and then replication starts in the correct direction. So think about it as a bidirectional replication. Does that answer your question? Thank you, good. Anything else? Any other questions? Right, in that case then, if there aren't, I'm going to be here afterwards, but please come and talk to me afterwards. What I would always say is, I would like to just point two things. Related content slide, there are a lot of sessions about DR and about Hyper-V replica and ASR this afternoon. I would highly recommend, particularly some of the sessions later on this afternoon. Some of the ASR guys have really started to deep dive in some of that stuff. I'd highly recommend joining it. And as always, please, I should jump through to it. Please, let's have our evals. You know, my track manager down here lives on the evaluation, so please, if you like the session, please evaluate it. It's really important for all of us. Anyway, hope you enjoyed the session. Thank you very much indeed.